Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Human Services Policy Committee to order. Members, please take your seat. We do not have a quorum yet, so what we're going to do is we will start the hearing for our first bill. If Representative Norris would like to come forward. Once we have a quorum, oh, we have a quorum now. Representative Norris, please go ahead and take a seat. We're going to deal with the minutes first. Representative Curran, would you like to move the minutes?
So moved, Chair.
Representative Curran moves the minutes for March 6, 2023. Any questions or amendments? Hearing none, all in favor of the minutes as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries, and the minutes from March 6th are approved. Members, we've got six bills on the agenda today. We've got a hard stop by 2:45, so I'm going to want to make sure that we keep testimony short and things moving along, and we are starting 5 minutes late. So I apologize to our first folks who are here today. Welcome to the committee, Representative Norris. Seeing you are not a member, I will move your bill that House File 2141 be re-referred to the Human Services Finance Committee. Representative Norris, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill and start your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and members. It's great to make my first appearance before the Human Services Policy Committee. I'm here today to bring forward House File 2141. This is a bipartisan bill that's about good governance and the state allowing our local partners to do their jobs more effectively. New county employees who will be administering programs like SNAP must go through a training from DHS before they can begin working. However, counties like my county of Anoka are struggling to get their new employees through the required training in a timely and efficient manner. In fact, it's not uncommon for new hires to have to wait 4 to 6 months to start. There's a number of issues that are contributing to this. First, the training typically only happens once a month, so employees can only start right around that once per month training date. Another issue is that trainings are limited to only 20 seats per class, and that's for all 87 counties plus our tribal nations. So, you know, counties may have to delay hiring or training for new staff if a training is full. And counties can only reserve 5 of those 20 training seats, which limits the number of new staff that they can bring on at one time. So this bill would allow counties who have the in-house resources to pilot providing in-house training for certain programs for 1 year. It would give these counties more flexibility in their hiring and their onboarding processes while freeing up space in the state-run training for smaller counties that can't do their own training. And this isn't just an Anoka County issue. Members, you've got letters in your packets from the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, as well as St. Louis County, Wright County, and Dakota County. So this is a common sense solution to a serious workforce and workload challenge for our counties. And with that, Chair Fisher, I'll turn it over to my testifier.
Thank you, Representative Norris. We have Director Jessica Leth. If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself, who you're with, and please start your testimony. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Leth, and I'm the Director of Economic Assistance for Anoka County. The hiring and retention of financial workers has been a struggle for many counties for many years, but this has been a great increase of concern recently coming off the pandemic. And with restarting of the annual health care renewals for our public assistance health care programs, it is very critical for counties to be fully staffed at this time. Under the current training structure, as it was just explained, new county workers need to attend DHS training. That training is typically only offered one time a month with limited slots. If a training is only offered one time per month, the training dates when they are available and the slots that are available may not align with the county's needs. This is a challenge when counties are experiencing multiple vacancies coupled with an unprecedented amount of work. There have been numerous times throughout the years when Anoka County has had to pass up a qualified applicant because they had a conflict with the timing of the DHS training or there are not enough training slots available. Anoka County is not unique in this experience. Many colleagues in other counties have experienced the same issues when trying to fill vacancies and train their staff. One county recently experienced a period of time where they had no trained staff to do family cash programs or child care assistance, and a training was not offered by DHS at that time, or there were not slots available. Anoka County currently has multiple financial worker vacancies, and if we are limited to set training dates and slots, it's going to take multiple months to get our staffing up where we need it to process the workload that we have. Many of the larger counties that do have the resources and interest to do in-house training already have an extensive county training program for new staff that is done in addition to the DHS training. In Anoka County, for example, we offer an additional 6 to 8 weeks of in-house training for our staff. We also recognize that there are many counties that do not have the capacity to provide in-house training and rely on DHS to train new employees. By allowing larger counties to train in-house, we will open up more slots for the DHS training for those smaller counties. The Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, MACSA, has raised this training concern with DHS on numerous occasions. And after months of asking for collaboration on this topic, we did start a work group on February 13th. The work group has representation from small, medium, and large-sized counties, two tribal nations, and DHS. DHS created the charter for the work group and defined counties and tribes providing required training for eligibility workers as out of scope for the work group. MACSA had envisioned discussion and exploration on this recommendation as part of the work group, so there is frustration among the counties that DHS unilaterally decided to keep county training out of scope with this collaborative work group. So I'm here before you today asking for support for House File 2141. This one-year pilot would allow counties with the available resources the flexibility to fill staff vacancies so we can provide essential services to our community members. Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify on House File 2141? Not hearing any members, any questions or comments? Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to Matt, or Representative Norris, and our testifier. I'm a little confused about where this is going and kind of it sort of circles back to my larger questions about the new Children and Families Department too, because I thought SNAP was going there, so I'm wondering why this isn't going to Children and Families. Can somebody help me understand?
Representative Norris, do you have an idea on that? I'm going to defer to our CA here, Nick Struma-Langer. He might be able to help shed some light on that.
Chair Fisher, Representative Hicks, the reason we're referring it to Human Services Finance is mostly due to deadlines. We want to keep this alive and through the committee process. If it needs to go to Children and Families Committee, I think that would be appropriate to discuss at the next committee stop and with Chair Noor, who is not sitting there at the moment.
Cool. Okay. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for clarifying. Since I sit on all three, I'm trying to figure out where things are landing, and there's just a lot.
Above my pay grade, Representative Hicks.
And a lot of it is we're on deadlines, and so we're trying to make sure
Perfect.
We can get to yes with our bills instead of no.
Perfect. I appreciate that. I just was trying to clarify. My other question, and this may be for the department if they're here, just about like why this training can't be an on-demand option or if that's ever been discussed. I'm just sort of wondering if that's a choice, if that's an option. I don't know if the department's here to answer that.
We've got people from the department. I don't know if one of our testifiers, the author, or if somebody from the department. I see Mr. Burdick making his way down here. Well, he's stopping for more advice.
Welcome, a friend.
Mr. Burdick. Please introduce yourself. And if you could answer the question, please.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. And Representative Hicks, I don't have an answer for that today, but I will get back to you on that specific question. I will say we've been chatting with our county partners about this idea, and we think there's some promise here and a way to help kind of relieve some of the mutual workforce challenges that we're all facing here. And so I think we're excited to keep working with folks on this, but I'll get back to you in the specifics about how these trainings are designed. Right now, we are facing our own capacity challenges, which of course are falling downstream to the county partners, and so I want to acknowledge that.
Thank you, Mr. Burdick. Representative Hicks, any further questions?
Yes, thank you so much for that clarification. I know everybody is just so strapped trying to be able to support all of the new folks coming up, and there's a workforce shortage, so my brain goes to on-demand trainings that meet class standards and are translated so that county employees, regardless of their language, can access the training, and the department can be confident that the information they're getting is accurate and succinct and correct, and counties don't have to use resources to train either. So whenever we're talking about training, I immediately go to, is there an on-demand option that we can create that would relieve stress from everybody? So I appreciate the conversation, and I'd love more information about whether what conversations have taken place and what may or may not be an option in the future as well.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Not seeing any. Oh, Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this forward. I'm in full support of the bill. I'm going to be reaching out to see if I can't jump onto this as a co-author, because we've heard a lot about how we're almost self-imposing strains in our workforce shortage. And if this is a way that we can take a look, see how counties can have some relief from that, that's a good thing. And I appreciate the insight.
Thank you, Representative Norris. Again, not seeing any others. Representative Norris, if you'd like to offer any closing comments.
Thanks, Chair Fisher, and I appreciate the supportive words from my Anoka County colleague, Representative Engen, and Representative Hicks. I love your innovative thinking. I think that's exactly what we should be doing, is trying to find ways to make government work better for our citizens and for our local government partners. This bill tackles one way in kind of a one-year pilot program, but let's keep the conversation going and see how we can make government work even better for folks.
Okay, with that, I renew my motion to refer House File 2141 to the Human Services Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. House File 2141 is referred to the Human Services Finance Committee. At this point, I will be turning the gavel over to Vice Chair Frederick, as I will be presenting the next few bills.
All right, the next bill on the agenda is House File 1403 from Chair Fisher. Chair Fisher, please introduce your bill.
Yes, I would like to move my bill, 1403, to be re-referred to the
General
Register. Thank you. Sorry, I forget for a second there. To the General Register, and then I also have a DE1 Authors Amendment.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Can you please explain your amendment?
Yeah. My DE1 author's amendment is to get the bill in the shape that I would like. The original bill was a policy bill that was covering all the policy for health and human services. Many of the provisions are already covered by other bills that have been either completed or being taken care of in other areas. And so what this does is it's going to narrow down the focus of the actual coverage in terms of policy. I would ask for your support.
Members, do we have any questions regarding the DE1 author's amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those say nay. The ayes have it. The DE1 is adopted.
Okay.
Back to the bill as amendment.
Thank you. Very briefly, in terms of the bill, as I mentioned, is we have this scaled down. This is going to be the Human Services Policy Vehicle Bill that we'll be putting out there. Right now, basically, the areas that it covers portions of some of the bills we've done. One of them is House File 1627, which was an Edelson bill that was covering some of the early policy provisions we had from Department of Human Services. We also have provisions in there from House File 1821, the Frederick bill, which was collecting demographic information from long-term care surveys. Another bill that's in there is House File 2234 from Representative Edelson, which was another Department of Human Services policy bill that we had come through. A lot more of it is technical. I will pause there to see if there's any questions or if we need a further walkthrough of all the different provisions. I do know that we'll have an amendment that Representative Baker will be offering when he comes in.
Sounds good. Chair Fisher, would you like DHS to come down to talk about
this? Yes, thank you. I do have. I do know that Mr. Burdick is here that can help explain the bill a little bit more.
Mr. Burdick, do you want to come join us, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. And as Chair Fisher mentioned, this is a collection of the policy bills that you've heard from the department so far this session. And so in addition to House File 1627 that Chair Fisher mentioned, we've also got House File 1821, which is being carried by yourself, Mr. Chair, related to our assisted living consumer surveys. We've also got House File 2284, carried by Representative Finke, which is a technical clarification related to some changes that impact our direct care and treatment programs. And then we have House File 2234, which was a Representative Edelson bill that has a collection of different policies, many of which this committee has heard both this session and in previous sessions. And I've got my colleagues here who could refresh the committee on some of the topics here, but all things that have been heard and vetted by this committee prior in session.
Are there any questions from any members of the committee? Representative Hicks.
Since we're waiting for Representative Baker, I'll just make a comment that I'm super excited to see the critical incident language. I'm really looking forward to what that can do for our state. So thank you to the department, and thank you to Rep. Fisher for prioritizing that.
It does look like we have another person signed up to testify, Chair Fisher.
Yes, we do have somebody from the Attorney General's office, and this is going to be speaking to the provision that will be offered in the amendment coming up, but I think we could go ahead and take them to speak in favor of the amendment.
Evan Romanoff wants to come down. They are. Come down and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. I'm Evan Romanoff. I'm an Assistant Attorney General at the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. I am here to really just answer any questions anyone has about this amendment that Representative Baker was offering. It is related to the claims bar, which was passed last year with regards to the opioids litigation and settlements that our office reached last year. The settlements last year, as you all know, I believe we presented on last month in this committee, were with several defendants, distributors, and manufacturer Johnson & Johnson. This year, as you know, we've reached five additional settlements with five more companies, and the language in front of you simply expands the legislation to make sure it applies to these new defendants as well and ensures Minnesota receives the maximum amount that's coming to us to abate the epidemic.
Sounds good. So Chair Fisher, thoughts on, we can just lay the bill over, wait for Representative Baker to get here, and then we can move on to the next bill?
Yes, let's lay it over, and then when Representative Baker comes in, we can do the amendment and then take care of the rest of the bill at that point in time.
The bill is laid over. We will proceed to House File 2712. Chair Fisher, if you want to introduce 2712.
Yes. First of all, I move to refer House File 2712 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. 2712 is the DHS Office of the Inspector General Policy and Technical Bill. It covers a number of areas. One of the big areas, and this is the main reason why it's coming to our committee here, is we spent a lot of time over this past session talking about different parts of the background studies, and this bill addresses that section. I do have some folks who are here who can help present the bill and offer explanations. So if I turn it over to them for them to start the presentation, please.
Sounds good, Mr. Chair. Looks like first up we have Autumn Baum is here. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Autumn Baum. I am the Legislative Director for the Office of Inspector General at the Department of Human Services. This bill makes policy changes to the statutes guiding the Office of Inspector General's work in program licensing, background studies, and program integrity. Regarding licensing, this bill expands the requirement that DHS licensed programs document the first date of direct contact for new staff. It makes multiple modifications to Chapter 245A to align with past statutory changes and current practice and to provide additional clarity for license holders. It adds a license holder's email to the list of publicly available data like name, address, and telephone number. The bill adds a prohibition for all types of prone restraints for an additional number of programs and services that we license. And finally, this bill ensures final licensing sanctions on a license are not taken before an investigation into a serious incident is complete. Regarding background studies, the bill also seeks to provide clarity to the background studies that DHS provides The updates to Chapter 245C in this bill will add and clarify study requirements and DHS authority to conduct background studies for various provider types, address Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and Federal Bureau of Investigation concerns with the sharing of background study data, and comply with the data sharing principle of minimum necessary. Enhancing DHS's efforts around program integrity, this bill will streamline and clarify the reconsideration process for medical providers and hospitals who request reconsideration or an appeal of a decision that an inpatient hospital service was not medically necessary. This bill will require that records are presented at the time they are requested and that they will be deemed inadmissible if offered later. This bill also allows DHS to request and receive records by mail, fax, or through a secure electronic transfer, and removes the requirement for an affidavit of mailing in addition to certified mail. Finally, this bill clarifies that medical service providers who fraudulently bill for services are under similar investigative authority as other medical providers. I just also wanted to share that we continue to work with the Minnesota Hospital Association on several provisions in this bill related to program integrity. We have not completed that work with them, but we expect an amendment soon.
Thank you for your testimony. At this point, I don't have anyone else signed up ahead of time. Are there any members of the public wishing to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'll turn it over to member questions. All right. Chair Fisher, any closing comments?
Thank you, members and committee, for the opportunity to present House File 2712. I encourage a green vote on it, and I renew my motion that House File 2712 be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
All those in favor of referring House File 2712 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion carries, and House File 2712 is referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. At this point, Mr. Chair, I would invite you to renew your motion for House File 1403.
Right. I'd like to take House File 1403 off the table, and at this point in time, we do have an A1 amendment that I understand is being offered by Representative Baker.
Representative Baker, I invite you to introduce your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me, and Representative Fisher, and my apologies for being delayed. The A1 amendment, members, is an important part of our work with the policy of DHS and how we structure the settlement dollars coming into Minnesota. As you'll see, there's just it's a simple one pager that earlier, a year or so ago, took us many months to develop and to get it right with the Attorney General's office. You can see on lines 1.14. through 1.18 on the A1, the defendants in the past have been Johnson & Johnson, AmerisourceBergen, Cardinal Health, and McKesson. Now we're adding a few more companies to the list that have recognized and admitted and basically have said, yep, we need to make this right, so that when Minnesota does take our national lawsuit dollars, that is a very complicated formula and how we get it, we are able to make sure that it stays in the right accounts. So earlier, these dollars, which right now are just north of, if we agree to this and this all passes, we're looking at about $500 million coming to Minnesota over the next 17, 18 years. And that's a lot of money, but it's not enough to do what we should have done a long time ago. But we're recognizing that this can be done for some good things. So these new companies that have stepped in to say, we'll settle this language allows us to make sure that the claims bar is covered, so that if we do agree to this, there is no more lawsuits coming out of the state of Minnesota. This legislation is important to do that with this amendment. And also then, it stays with our same agreement with our county partners, which get 75% of the lawsuit dollars. 25% of the money comes into the ORAC committee, the council that I've mentioned before, that Opioid Epidemic Advisory Council that I'm a part of. So this is an important amendment, Mr. Chair and Chair Fisher. Thank you for allowing me to add this. And again, I want to thank the Attorney General's office for their really good work on this and continuing to fight for as much dollars as we can get in Minnesota. And this really does that. So sorry for the long-winded amendment, but that's what it is. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative Baker. I'd like to remind the committee, too, that we actually had a presentation on this exact topic earlier in session. Chair Fisher, any comments?
I want to say, first of all, Representative Baker, thank you for all the work that you've been doing in this area over the last few years. I know where your heart is and how you're doing great things. I wholeheartedly support your amendment. Welcome. I appreciate the work that you've been doing on this and recommend that everyone vote yes on this amendment.
Any other discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment to House File 1403 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion carries and the A1 amendment is adopted. Any further discussion to the bill as amended? Seeing no further discussion, Chair Fisher, would you like to have any closing comments?
Committee, I recommend a strong green vote on it. I thank Representative Baker for his amendment that made this a much better bill. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 1403 as amended be placed upon the General Register.
All those in favor of placing House File 1403 as amended on the General Register signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion carries and House File 1403 is amended, as amended, is recommended to be placed upon the General Register. The next bill is House File 2553, also from Chair Fisher. Chair Fisher, please move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to have to refer House File 2553 to the Human Services Finance Committee.
I also understand that you have an A1 author's amendment. Please move and explain your amendment.
Yes, I do. This is to help get the bill in the shape I would like. The amendment does several things. It makes additional changes to add flexibility to the assertive community treatment programs. It removes county-based purchasing from Section 11, removes rigid clientele eligibility criteria for peer services, broadening access to peer services for adults, children, and families, and adds specifically to data reporting under school-based behavioral health grants to streamline the grant reporting requirements.
Members, any discussion to the A1 author's amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A1 author's amendment to the House File 2553, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion carries and the A1 author's amendment is adopted. Chair Fisher, please explain your bill.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Frederick and committee. House File 2553 is a very important bill. In this moment when we're increasing access to mental health care, it is critical for us, that is critical for our state. We must take steps to streamline regulations, adapt to meet workforce environment, and focus on efforts on quality treatment. Paired with efforts to fix Medicaid reimbursements, the mental health services community is also working to clear unnecessary administrative underbrush from the care systems and align regulations with industry updates and standards and client needs. This will lessen barriers clients face in accessing care and allows providers to focus on the care delivery to clients and communities, not on paperwork compliance. House File 2553 is also part of the Mental Health Legislative Network Regulation Streaming Bill that builds off work done by the Mental Health Uniform Services Standard that was done in past session. It's also part of the Governor's Children Therapeutic Services and Supports Work Group and other similar efforts that were held with stakeholders collectively working together to identify specific places where we can modernize regulation to increase access and make the best use of provider time so that we're meeting clients where they're at with the right accountability in terms of documentation. I would also like to note that this bill language has been shared with DHS, and we're going to continue to work with them on any technical assistance that they have that is available. I would also like to thank Representative Keel for signing on to this bill, and I have several testifiers. I will now turn it over to them.
Sounds good. First up, we have Ann Henderson. Please make your way to the testifying table, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Ann Henderson, and I am the CEO of Mental Health Resources. Mental Health Resources is a longstanding, well-regarded, community-based mental health provider. We serve people who live with serious and persistent mental illness, those who are often considered some of our most vulnerable neighbors. I'm here to testify in support of House File 2553, and I'm going to highlight a few specifics of the bill that will help MHR's clients gain better access to services. The bill's proposed changes to the Assertive Community Treatment Team ACT programs will help the workforce shortage, program capacity, and improving access to services. MHR has three ACT teams in the metro area, and we serve an average of 250 individuals each year. People served by ACT teams are often plagued by numerous barriers, including living with serious and impairing symptoms that often lead to housing instabilities, employment challenges, food insecurity, frequent hospitalizations, and frequent interfacing with law enforcement. The work of the ACT team is difficult, complex, and requires a unique set of skills that can be hard to find in the workforce. On our Ramsey County team, we've recently had to disrupt a long-standing and highly qualified team leader from her role due to changes in regulation. We were informed that she could no longer be a team leader because only a licensed worker can provide supervision. This person is having trouble passing the national licensing exam, but despite that, is very capable and a competent team leader. These teams are staffed by at least three additional positions which are licensed, including a psychiatric prescriber. The role of the team leader is program-focused, including coordination, compliance, and administrative oversight. The changes to ACT teams in House File 2553 will help address worker shortage, offering well-qualified staff a career ladder, recognizing discriminatory practices and barriers in licensing, and improve access for clients. On the item of setting certification standards, our experience at MHR with certified programs has been significant delays in certification, directly impacting our ability to provide care. We've experienced inconsistent guidance and feedback during audits, depending on the individual who's doing that audit, and slow and inconsistent responses to critical inquiries. Providers need your help in removing barriers that clients face in accessing mental health care, especially administrative barriers that do not actually support safety, quality, or best practice. They would allow us more to focus on the care delivery to our clients and communities. I request that you please support House File 2553. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Trevor Johnson. Please make your way to the table, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this time. My name is Trevor Johnson. I'm the Senior Strategy Director of Behavioral Health at Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota, or LSS. At LSS, we provide mental health, behavioral health services across the state of Minnesota to children, adults, and families. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2553. The crisis of timely access to mental health continues across Minnesota. When we connect with children, adults, and families, and connect them to this much-needed care, we see relief on their face, we see gratitude in their hearts, and we see a resolve to develop a pathway to live their best lives. When we have to tell families that they'll have to wait weeks or months to start care, we often see true despair. In my own family, I work in this field. In my own family, I have a family member who is looking for specialty care and has had to wait up to 6 months to get services started. And that's a reality that we're in this field for a number of reasons. And one of the solutions in front of us is to continue the quest to administratively simplify this work. Out of this crisis, we continue to pursue all kinds of strategies to increase access to mental health care and enhance our capacity to deliver this much-needed treatment and care. This includes administrative simplifications to streamline and update our systems, as well as continuous evaluation of client caseloads, waiting lists, and the severity of needs of the people who are seeking our help. Our providers are making difficult decisions every day on how to best meet and prioritize the needs of their clients that often far exceed their own capacity to serve. Any and all adjustments to reduce the administrative burden of this work allow our providers to focus more on individualized client care and to operate at the top of their license. Some highlights from this legislation as amended include, in Sections 1 and 6, technical corrections from the original Uniform Service Standards, or USS, to exclude clinical trainees from additional training requirements as they are already receiving rigorous supervision and have training requirements that are overseen through the state licensing boards. Section 4 allows clinical discretion in determining the best assessment tools and best approach for children to be applied outside of the diagnostic assessment as needed. It really puts in the hands of that mental health professional to be making those choices. Section 7 creates a clear path for provider for future provider certification, important, which is essential in planning, data collection, and operations, and helps to set some clear standards of evaluation by DHS and the certification process itself. Section 11 on timely filing reflects a desire for consistency between the managed care organizations and the DHS fee-for-services, or fee-for-service process, to decrease confusion related to administrative expense of navigating all these different timelines and components, and to help us reduce the amount of tracking that we have to do for these numerous processes, and just to get reimbursed for the same activities. Think of this as allowing service. In terms of Section 7, I also want to highlight that I try to think about this coming from a family of educators, that in some ways this is setting a consistent scoring rubric for providers so that we are all measured on the same thing and that we have a clear picture of what we're being measured on. As a final note, I do want to express my appreciation for an ongoing focus on adjusting reporting requirements to allow us to focus most on the service and to reduce the information while still supporting the work that we do and capturing that important story of the impact of the work that we do. Thank you again. I please ask you for your support of House File 2553.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing nobody else that is signed up, is there anyone in the audience that is looking to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move on to member questions. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Fisher, I guess to the amendment, I wanted to better understand the removing of the, help me with this stuff here now, county-based purchasing. That has been a real touchy subject for some of us lately, that folks are trying to get onto and into and how it works. Your amendment deletes that part of the bill, and I need better clarification, if you can help me with that.
Chair Fisher.
That I may have to phone a little friend here to help me with that part of it.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. Ginny Palin with the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And Representative Baker, if I'm understanding your question correctly, the intent of the amendment is to exempt county-based purchasers from the new requirements that we're looking to set across the rest of the managed care programs. We've had some conversations with the county-based purchasers, and the intent was not to our concern is not really with how they are performing in these realms. It is more so with some of the other conversations, some of the other managed care contracts that our providers are struggling with in terms of being able to get claims paid, as well as conversations around prior authorizations and making sure that the services that are being provided are accessible and sustainable across our clients.
Mr. Chair, so is it safe to assume that they're asking for that pause right now to be not included?
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, yes, we've had some conversations, and that was where we landed with the representatives from the county-based purchasers.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions from the committee? Mr. Chair, any closing comments?
Thank you, Vice Chair Frederick. I want to thank people for the opportunity to present House File 2553. I'd like to thank my co-author, Representative Keel, for being a co-author on here and for her support. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 2553, as amended, be referred to the Human Services Finance Committee.
All those in favor of referring House File 2553 to the Human Services Finance Committee, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, signify by saying nay. The motion carries, and House File 2553, as amended, is referred to the Human Services Finance Committee.
Okay, the next bill that we have on our agenda is going to be House File 2628 from Vice Chair Frederick. So as Vice Chair Frederick moves down, would you like to move and introduce your bill, please? As soon as he has the language we need. Yes. the scripts are important. Just make sure we say the right words in the right order to get them to the next stop with the least amount of issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to refer House File 2628 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Vice Chair Frederick moves House File 2628 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. If you'd like to go ahead and present your bill, please, Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill, we've heard the kind of the first installment of this work in the substance use disorder world already in committee. This is the second piece to that. Once again, actually, I want to say quickly that it's been something that I've noticed this year that we've been in person. I've seen some people kind of co-presenting, and I didn't reach out to Representative Baker ahead of time, but he has been one that has been working very closely with this. I know this is an area that he cares a lot about, and I could see him sitting up here talking about it just as much as I could. And so I just want to recognize him and the work that he has done on this as well. So thank you, Representative Baker. So what this bill is looking to do is make it easier. We all know in the space of substance use disorder treatment, it's a cycle, and quite often people are in that cycle where they go to treatment, they have an incident where they use again, go to treatment, and it's just kind of that cycle. We want to kind of break that cycle as much as we can by putting as many supports in as possible, but also some of those supports look like a workforce and trying to do things that we can pull more people to do this work and also make it easier for the people that are already in the field to make their lives easier so they can really have as much contact time as possible. And I'm just going to be brief there. We have experts here, Mr. Chair and committee members, that can talk about this stuff much better than I could, and I would just invite them down to testify.
Very good. Thank you, Vice Chair Frederick. I believe we've got Mr. Zerbis, who is here to speak to us. Welcome to the committee. Good to see you here again. Please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Brian Zerbis. I'm here representing MARCH, the Minnesota Association of Resources for Recovery and Chemical Health. I'm going to give a brief overview of each of the sections. So sections 1, 2, and 3 are actually somewhat related. One of the things we're trying to seek here is to solve some issues that people that come into treatment, complete treatment, oftentimes they are moving from place to place, they get property stolen. So what this section does is it will allow them to get their birth certificate replaced, their driver's license replaced, or ID card replaced, and have those fees waived. Section 4 is touching on documentation requirements. What this section does is it extends the timeline requirements for treatment plan reviews to be done up to every 28 days instead of the current requirements of every 7 days or weekly. This would be ease the burden for documentation requirements for staff. Section 5 is transition follow-up counseling. What this section is looking at doing is focusing on documentation requirements for people that get low-intensity treatment, and it would eliminate the need to have a weekly treatment plan review completed. So for these individuals, they may get counseling once a month or once every couple months, so the removing the treatment plan review requirements would ease burden for counselors. Section 6 is regarding rate requirements. There's a few pieces in this section. One is related to the high, medium, and low intensity residential programs have to provide 30 hours, 15 hours, and 5 hours respectively to each client each treatment week. There are times when a client misses a group because they're sick or because of other appointments, and when that client falls below that threshold, the programs aren't able to bill for the level of services that they're providing and staffing towards. So this would allow the program to identify what they're doing to keep the person engaged in treatment and continue to be able to bill at that level. Another part in Section 6 is along the lines of those treatment hours, there would be a reduction in the treatment hours in recognition of a federal holiday. In this section, there's also changes to co-occurring staffing requirements. Substance disorder programs that get a co-occurring rate enhancement have to have a certain percent, 25% of their counseling staff have to be mental health professionals or a combination of students and licensing candidates. What this language would do is it would clarify that a program would need one full-time equivalent or 25% of their counseling staff, whichever is less. This is would be of benefit, particularly for smaller programs. Meeting that 25% staffing threshold is a significant barrier. And then the last part, eliminating the 50% threshold for students and licensing candidates. Section 7 is regarding treatment effectiveness data. So this would allow programs to get data back from the Department of Human Services. SED programs submit a lot of data to the state. The interest of programs is to be able to get that data back in a meaningful format to do program evaluation. There's also language to have providers work with the commissioner on developing these reporting measures. Section 8 is a temporary rate increase of 24%. So this rate increase is temporary in the sense that there's a current rate study that's happening that the department is doing. Once those the new rate methodology is implemented, this 24% would rate increase would go away, and then in the future, this whatever the new methodology is would be in effect. Section 9 is tied to that rate increase. What that identifies is of the 24% rate increase, one-third of that would need to be directed to or dedicated as a direct care staff pass-through. This was built off of a 2021 home and community-based services direct care increase. So we modeled that language after that. And then the last section is Section 10, Transition Support Services. This is a continuation from something that we've been trying to develop and looking at. As people transition to and from treatment, they experience a number of barriers and gaps to success that include housing, childcare, transportation, things like that. So what Section 10 identifies is to develop a work group with the Department of Human Services and stakeholders, including current clients and former clients in treatment, to identify some of these gaps and bring recommendations back to the legislature. So that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to speak on House File 2628? Hearing none, we'll go to members' comments and questions. I would like to start out, first of all, by thanking Vice Chair Frederick and Representative Baker for the work that you've done over the last couple of years on this. This is an initiative I know that started last year that you've both been working hard on, and I appreciate the bipartisan work that's been occurring here and being able to get this to the point where we are today, and looking forward to you folks continuing the great work. So with that, I want to say thank you, and Representative Baker.
And thank you for that kind words for everybody working on this issue. It's this is one of those bills that does take a long time to get it right, and it's taken us a couple of years to get to this point. Again, I want to thank the author of the bill, Representative Frederick, on this, because he has worked alongside with our group a lot. And we've had our standing meetings every single week. We have never had lunch together, but we feel like we do online. And Brian, to you too as well, thank you for all your support and help. It's complicated to get substance abuse stuff right. And in this bill, we did a lot of that good stuff. We made it. We gave us some wiggle room here. We gave us some abilities to breathe a little bit as providers in the industry to allow some flexibility when holidays show up and when staffing issues are real, and we need to just give it a little bit of a break without losing some of that major funding. The reimbursements on this is also really critical for us, and I know we have more stops on this, but again, I just want to say working through this process with our teams and with our advocates out there, they did get this bill really done well, thought through. The team at March really thinks this stuff through. So I just want to really encourage members. We have a lot more work to do on this. There's more to come. But thank you for all the bipartisan work on this, because, again, the families out there like mine that want to see us do good things with this, this is a big help for the providers that are doing the service that we're begging them to do. So making it a little bit easier with them today and getting them some more money is really important. So thanks, everybody, for working on this, especially Representative Frederick. So thanks so much for being a partner with us. Thanks.
Very good. I don't see any other questions or comments. Just for those who are interested, while the next stop on here is going to be the health, finance, and policy, it will probably end up at transportation. and eventually at health, excuse me, at Human Services Finances, where this bill will eventually end up. So with that, Vice Chair Frederick, closing comments, and if you'd like to renew your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think some of my favorite parts about this bill are not just the paperwork reductions and the rate reimbursements. I mean, those are kind of the more boring stuff. The things about this that I really get excited about is that we are seeing people's humanity, and we want to say if you are coming through treatment, we want to see that you did. We want to see you be successful after that, because some of the reasons that there is that cycle is that there's nothing after somebody comes out of treatment, or if there is, it can be really hard to find. And so being able to do things like Mr. Zerbis mentioned about having childcare in place, transportation, housing, recognizing that these are part of a lived experience that we want to make sure to support someone to be successful after coming out of that treatment. So when the goal is that when they come out one time, that they don't keep going around in that cycle. So I'm excited about this legislation, and I appreciate the committee's support. So with that, I renew my motion to refer House File 2628 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Okay. Vice Chair Frederick renews his motion to refer House File 2628 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and House File 2628 is referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, folks, for the hard work on this bill. Next, we are coming up on our final bill on the agenda, and this is our final bill before first deadline. It is House File 2321 from Chair Pinto. We have a hard stop that's going to be at 2:45 today, so I will be cutting off discussion by then so we can vote and adjourn by 2:45 sharp. Since Chair Pinto is not a member of the committee, I will move to refer House File 2321 to State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. Welcome, Chair Pinto. I understand you have an author's A1 amendment.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I will move the author's A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the Chair Chair Pinto would like. Chair Pinto, would you like to explain your bill, please? Your amendment, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe that this amendment, and I actually will admit I don't have a copy with me right at the moment, but that the amendment simply catches the bill up to the version of the bill that passed out of the Children and Families Committee yesterday. In particular, I think the real highlight is centering the lived experience of kids and families in the work of the agency. And so would ask for members' support for it.
Okay. Are there any questions on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. Chair Pinto, if you'd like to go ahead and amend and explain your bill as amended. And I also know that we will be having the commissioner joining us shortly here to go to present further information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2320 is a component of the governor's budget proposals. It would establish a Department of Children, Youth, and Families, drawing from several other departments. I should probably note that the heart of the new agency, or the bulk is maybe a better term to use, of the new agency would consist of folks from the Children and Family Services Division of DHS, which is the division overseen by the Children and Families Committee in the House. But there are folks and programs coming over from the Department of Education, the Department of Public Safety as well. And members, this is a proposal that really is years in the works. There's been multiple reports going back to certainly the early 2000s about the need to have programs that relate to the needs of kids, especially young kids, but all kids be put, receive the alignment and strategic focus that come from being in a dedicated agency. So I was really delighted to see this proposal from the administration. Members have a presentation in front of them, a legal size thing that that I don't believe the plan is to go through, but it was presented in our committee yesterday and thought it'd be useful for the members of this committee to have. And Mr. Chair, it sounded like the commissioner is not quite here yet. Is that correct?
That is correct. We've got probably about 2 minutes. She was in the middle of another presentation, is coming straight from there. So I'm expecting it'll be about 2 to 3 minutes.
I can. And Mr. Chair, with your permission, I will continue to vamp. I can go off about the need to center kids and families all day. So 2 minutes is nothing. And so, Mr. Chair, and members, again, there's been talk about this for a number of years, but the need for this, and the programs in question, and I'll note that they're kind of, about midway through the bill in listing the programs that would be moved over in the creation of the department. What the proposal does is to have a one-year period starting on July 1 in which the plan for exactly how the programs would move over will be developed, and then a commissioner starts work on July 1 of 2024, and then programs then move over the ensuing year, and the department is fully in place by July 1 of 2025, so more than 2 years from now. So this is a really well-thought-out and careful approach to things that we know is going to end with having these programs center the needs of kids and families to a much greater extent. I should maybe note for members in particular that the 2018 Office of Legislative Auditor report, which folks may be familiar with, that studied governance in early childhood programs, talked about the impact of having programs in such fragmented ways. You have an area I'm particularly familiar with in terms of child care and early learning. You've got very similar programs in the Department of Human Services, Department of Education. And what happens is that for families and for the folks doing the work, it's extremely challenging for them to work with this. We have different standards different funding streams, and that we end up putting the burden on families and on teachers and on providers rather than on the state, and we really want to make sure that we are organized in a way that will serve families in the best way possible. So that's the purpose here of that. So I gather we're still waiting for the commissioner.
I'm guessing that they are on their way down. It'll be probably another minute or so.
Yeah, okay.
We can take a pause, or if you'd like to add anything else.
I'm just trying to think, because I can any one angle, Mr. Chair, I'm going to end up getting pretty excited about to go. Why don't we, just wondering if, since you do have the presentation in front of you, if it makes any sense, 1 second here.
What we could also do maybe is if there's any, if there,
hey.
Oh, here we go.
Hi.
Commissioner Hartsand, welcome. You are just on time.
Hello. Yeah, it's all good.
Chair Pinto just finished his expanded presentation of his bill, and we are now ready for you to begin your presentation. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your presentation.
Well, thank you, and thank you for waiting. Chair Fisher and members, my name is Jody Harpstead. I serve as the Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. Pleased to be here today to speak in support of House File 2321, creating a new Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Our state depends on the success of Minnesota children, youth, and families. While Minnesota is ranked as a top state to live and work, this is not yet true for every Minnesotan. Our systems have not led to equitable outcomes for children, and today race, zip code, and income are too often determinants of opportunity. We must embrace opportunities to think differently and to improve the effectiveness of service delivery in our current systems for children and families who need them most. I've known since I started as commissioner that the governor and lieutenant governor were considering following suit with 22 other states and creating a separate agency for children, youth, and families. You may have heard me testify in the past with concerns about a Department of Early Learning, which I felt would be too small to be a smart way to organize state government, after having to add HR, finance, legal, and compliance functions to a fairly tiny agency. What makes this year's proposal different is it would create an agency with sufficient size and scope to elevate child, youth, and family priorities and funding needs and make more sense for those support functions. This change, along with the proposal for a direct care and treatment agency, also leaves the Department of Human Services well positioned to carry out our core mission as primarily the state's Medicaid agency. This was so important to DHS that I brought back Deputy Commissioner Chuck Johnson with over 35 years of state government experience, who started his career in children's services and has managed every function in DHS over the years, in a post-retirement option to serve on the interagency committee that drew up the proposal and is laying out a plan to work out the details over the next 2 years. We look forward to working with you all and others to discuss the details of this proposal as session continues, but I want to reiterate my strong support and excitement about this proposal to make a generational change in how we organize the work of state government to truly make Minnesota the best place for all children to grow up. Thank you for your time and patience today.
Thank you, Commissioner Harpstad. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to speak to House File 2321 as amended? Not seeing anyone, I will go to members' questions and comments. Members, Chair Knorr, I'm taking it as going to go first. Chair Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, and also Chair Pinto. This is exciting to see that we are moving ahead with the proposal to create the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. I know it's complicated. Many folks would like to know, as we do the transitioning and the planning, we have got systems in place that really interconnect what we do right now. And so the question of how do we handle the systems, we know MAXIS is the core system that we use, and according to the plan, it stays with the Department of Children and Families, and it stays with DHS, with the intent of creating a new system. Will that change the entire process of how we build a new system for the new department?
Commissioner Harpstad.
Yes, Chair Fisher and Rep. Knorr. There's a lot of things yet to be determined about many elements of this proposal. My expectations is systems might be the last thing we change. It's easier to move people around and put people together in work groups and to think differently about the work that we do. You are very well aware how long it takes to change systems. And our expectation is as we get started with this new agency, counties, for example, would continue to use our current systems to enroll people in benefits for children, both Medicaid in terms of the Department of Human Services and, for example, MFIP in regard to this new agency for children, youth, and families. And new systems would simply come along as we continue to do our systems transformation work, working across agency to make sure it meets the needs of both, if that's helpful to hear.
Chair Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I think you mentioned people. You know, that's the core mission of what we do. As we focus on the outcomes that we're going to be doing for families in Minnesota. In the structure of this big mission, how do we see the staff being moved from one place to the other, and how are we going to become more equitable so that we are able to retain those who are well qualified so that we're able to deliver the outcomes that we're looking for?
Commissioner Harpstad.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and Chair Knorr. First of all, one core of the new agency is simply the DHS Children and Family Services Administration, been working together for many years, so they would work. They would move as a whole. It's funny how we say move when people are working remotely, right? I don't know if they'll go to a different building or not. So they'll continue to do their work together. They've done work for years across agency with the Department of Education, especially through COVID, where we all learned a lot about interagency work. And then they'd be meeting new colleagues from the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Health and working with them as well. So it's not like we're taking a lot of folks we've never met and just putting them together and hoping it works. We're taking groups that have been working together for years, working with other groups they've worked with for years, putting the whole thing together and asking them to form a new whole and start thinking in new ways together. I'm not sure that answered your question entirely.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Knorr.
So the question is, you know, there are different levels for different employees in different places as we bring them together. You know, they have got different classification, different payrolls, and different settings. Are we going to move people and make sure that they're paid fairly and equitably, and so that they also retain their collective bargaining rights and everything else that they've been putting together?
Commissioner Harpstad.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and Chair Knorr. For the whole time I've been commissioner, we've been talking about the possibilities of reorganizing. We've always said conversations with our bargaining units will be the first thing we have to do. And so we will need to really talk with our collective bargaining units and understand how this works. I know they've been through reorganizations before and have some experience with what do you do about classifications and how does that all work. And so we would be asking them for their counsel and advice and co-creating that together as we really get down to the details and figuring out how this is all going to look and work.
Chair Knorr.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay, next I have Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So overall, I am supportive of the idea. And I just have concerns in terms of how we get there and how do we do so in a way that is cohesive. And so I do have some questions. And I specifically want to talk a little bit about the Department of Education. And so under this, we're merging Human Services, Education, and Public Safety. Is there another? I guess if we could just talk. And then I want to go. I mean, there's so many questions that, I mean, I know that I have Aaron Bailey coming to my office tomorrow. But I just, you know, when you look at line 14.15, when we're talking about after-school community learning programs, those are, you know, I want to just know those currently are in the K through 12 finance. I just want to understand how some of this, you know, works. And there's a lot of concerns just in general about how our government works in terms of, you know, right yesterday in the Environment Committee, I asked the DNR a question, and it was like, oh, well, the MPAC should know this. And so I think for community members, they just want to have access to this. So I guess tell me how you plan to streamline this in a way. There's a lot of stuff there.
Should we call
Commissioner Harpstead?
I could call on Aaron if it's a non-DHS thing. Or Mr. Chair, I wonder if we should maybe have Aaron Bailey, if we can, Director of the Children's Cabinet.
Sure. Please come forward. Thank you. Please introduce yourself. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thanks, Chair Fisher. Representative Ellison, I look forward to our time tomorrow. So included in the proposal, the core, as Commissioner Harpstead testified, is really an elevation of Children and Family Services at the Department of Human Services, child care licensing from OIG. Specifically, you asked about from MDE. So there it is, both early learning services within the Department of Education and then the after-school program, which is proposed in the governor's budget but not currently a funded program. And that is really based on community feedback for this desire for kind of a focus on youth. Related to public safety, it's the Office of Youth Justice. And then there is an additional program not in the legislation called Help Me Connect, which is, again, proposed, that is housed at the Department of Health, that is proposed in the governor's budget, but is not in statute, so it's not listed in the bill. But we can share follow-up information with you and kind of the process and planning around that.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Bailey. I appreciate that. So it looks like we'll be hiring a commissioner for July 1 of 2024, and that would take place at that point. The transition and the rulemaking would already have been done, or is there a phase-in process? Help me understand this a little bit more.
Assistant Commissioner Bailey.
Yeah, Chair Fisher, Representative. Yeah, it's a really good question, and I just, going back to your original question, too, just want to thank you for the focus on having it make sense for Minnesotans. I think that is a key reason why, on behalf of my colleagues that have been for this proposal have worked together, have felt like this is really necessary, is how do we create that front door for Minnesotans around kids and families. So the proposal creates a two-year planning process, so a transition implementation team transition fund being available July 1 of this year that would work over the next 2 years. A new commissioner is directs the governor to appoint that new commissioner July 1 of 24, and then kind of allows the transfer of programs between July 1 of 24 and July 1 of 25. The language, so those could happen. Part of the charge for the transition would be to lay out that very specific timeline. As you can imagine, there's complexity here, which you're touching on. And so making sure that we get that right, this should lead to better, more equitable outcomes for kids and families. And we, I think, on behalf of my colleagues across the administration, that is the goal. And so laying out that timeline that allows us to get to that point. And Chair Pinto's bill also includes language that will create flexibility if pieces that we don't see now are uncovered to change that timeline in terms of the move. We felt like we need, for all sorts of reasons, to list out that clear core of services, but then to create a process where we can adapt if needed.
Representative Edelson.
Just one more, Mr. Chair. Okay, so thank you, Ms. Bailey. That's really helpful. And I just, one last thing is, I like the idea as a social worker looking at, you know, a child and a family as a whole person, trying to have it all there. We don't do that well in government. We make it very hard for Minnesotans to access services they need. And so, you know, as we sit at these tables and we're talking about redoing our data systems this year, how does it look and how does that interplay with this? So we're talking about restructuring, like, how human service data and the amount of stuff that we're collecting and making things, like, easier for Minnesotans to access. How is that going to interact here? Is this coming in at a good time? And maybe Chair Noor can maybe talk if you have any ideas on that. I think that we should have that out in the public, though.
Okay, and Representative Edelson, was that for the assistant commissioner, or who would?
I think maybe I don't know. I'm gonna go to Chair Noor maybe, if you wouldn't mind. Like, if you thought about this, how this is gonna work with in terms of the funding that we're trying to fund this year, and then how that would interact with creating this new agency.
I will go over to Chair Noor to take first swing and see where we go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Edelson. We have got a bill that is coming soon that is going to fund the systems in general. My dream is to see a single entry place whereby you can apply for once and your information that we allow to share some of that information across the system, so you don't have to repeat over and over the same application process. That is the dream that we really want to achieve, and I'm hoping that through that conversation with the systems request, we may be able to do that.
Okay, very good. Representative Edelson?
Mr. Chair, I would just request to Ms. Bailey and Chair Pinto that when we're thinking about developing this, that is being thought of in that process. Thank you.
All right. With that, I will then move on to, I've got Representative Hicks, and then I've got Representative Keel. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much, Chair Pinto. Thank you for being here again. And I want to thank folks in the current department and for meeting with me and talking through some of my concerns about 260D. I continue to be concerned. I really want to continue that dialogue. Kiddos that are in voluntary foster care placement are there because of the S in CHIPS, right? We're talking about services. Services are going to live in the other department. I believe they should remain there. But I want to make sure that we've got very specific, targeted ways to collaborate, because it is already an island. If your child is struggling with a significant need and has been put into a voluntary placement and is residing in one of our facilities that is either, you know, a residential mental health facility or a developmental disabilities facility, and you are working a plan to try to bring that child home, and the system isn't, you sometimes have three case managers in that scenario for those families. And I need to feel really confident that there is a very specific, very thought through, very collaborative approach to how we're not going to make that the most traumatic experience for everyone in that family unit. And so I really appreciate the dialogue. I continue to be very concerned about that 260D piece. And I'm very concerned that there aren't, you know, advocacy organizations and other people at the table having some of those conversations, and that none of them are referenced in here in this year of planning. And so I kind of publicly wanna go on the record as saying, we gotta work this through. If your child is struggling with chemical dependency, extreme mental health, and we're in a 260D situation, we got to make sure those families don't feel like this move isolated them.
Chair Noor, excuse me, Chair Pinto, any comment?
I don't know if you. Well, I'll just say, it looks like maybe Assistant Commissioner or Deputy Commissioner Tiki Brown may be up here to provide thoughts in response to that.
Mr. Chair. Assistant Commissioner Tiki Brown, please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you. Tiki Brown, Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at DHS. And just in response, thank you. I also appreciate the dialogue that we've had and the concerns that you brought forward. And I think our process during this transition timeframe is to ensure that we have a deep engagement process laid out so that we can have and engage in conversations not only with counties and tribes in a much more deeper manner, but also with folks with lived experience and other advocacy and stakeholders and partners. And so that's critical in how we put in place the new proposed agency, and in addition, how we can address some of the needs that may arise around what does the technology look like? How are we assuring that we are not creating additional gaps or issues? And so our goal, I think, is to ensure that a plan is put in place so that services, critical services, continue without putting any additional stressors. So appreciate that and look forward to continued conversation. Thank you.
Representative Hicks, anything else? Okay. Next I have Representative Keel, then we'll be Representative Baker. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when I'm listening to this, I was looking through this. We didn't go through it, but this touched base of the history, and I noticed that other administrations have done different things. So we've had a group of Department of Children and Families and Learning, then we changed back to MDE, MDH, and DHS. We've talked about, I've heard this conversation before in the last few years about combining it. I have the same concerns that Representative Hicks is pointing out. My question is, did I understand correctly that this would stay likely in the same building? Everyone would be in the same building working together?
Chair Pinto, or would this be more Commissioner Harpstad? Welcome, Commissioner Harpstad.
Yes, thank you, Chair Fisher. Rep. Keel, no one knows that part yet. we have a plan that's going on behind the scenes, figuring out our whole state building strategy with people working remotely nowadays. And we're examining what we should do in the Department of Human Services, and so are each of the other departments. So even as we then reorganize, we've had conversations in the last couple of years about co-locating parts of the Department of Education with parts of Department of Human Services to do the kinds of things we're talking about here. So I could imagine having this new agency assigned a place in one of our state buildings where they all sit together as they form a new group and try to build team and all of that. But we don't have the building strategy ironed out by any means, even for the existing agencies.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just thinking about where everybody physically is at right now, not even across the street or anything. So, and then you're talking about public safety looks to me like part of this proposal because of different situations with children. I guess I worry about school systems getting lost in the shuffle, the healthcare. To me, it looks like this is a long way down the road, not just in 2 years. Just making sure that we do things that our transition is much better for both the services of the families and also for the functioning entities within our county and our school districts. And I can just see this as maybe taking us longer to move because government doesn't move fast. And I've not seen it happen yet. But my concern would be is that we don't have the appropriate services for families and addressing things rather, you know, COVID really pointed out how slow things can end up being. So my concern would be is that we're doing it in an appropriate manner. And then are we saving dollars? Are we more effective? Those things would also be not the saving dollars is the most important thing, but are we being prudent with the dollars that we're spending?
Chair Pinto or Commissioner Harpstad, any comments?
I'll just maybe just say that I think the goal certainly would be to be most effective as possible in serving kids and families, and that's the whole point. I'll say, having worked on the early childhood portion of this for a number of years, I just know that you know, what we've heard from the legislative auditor and other sources, and just what we know is that the structure that we have, despite incredible people, incredible leaders like Commissioner Harpstad in place, the structure that we have is a structure that is fragmented for some of these programs. And so the thinking is that actually this will serve families in a better way. But the Commissioner has something she wanted to add, but that'd be my reaction.
Commissioner Harpstad.
Chair Fisher and Rep. Keel, in my experience in reorganizing large organizations, I would also be concerned taking too long to do it and keeping people in a transitional mode for way too long instead of getting settling in and saying, here's the thing, and now let's create a team and build our new department together. So there's trade-offs in both directions of going too fast and going too slow. I think our general assumption is commissioners have come together and talked about this along with Assistant Commissioner Bailey, is that this is a fairly nice long time to really think through a lot of these things that we're all talking about right now. And then taking our time to put it together and helping it to settle in. And so we'll see as we go. If it feels like it needs more time, we may need to adjust. But so far, I think it's a fairly strong plan.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Rep. Pinto, for thinking outside the box. I think this is just it's a big idea. And I think, you know, we're including really four agencies, considering into one, new commissioner. I think, again, we've got plenty of brick-and-mortar places around where we can find some nice places for them to be housed at. I get the timing. I get the concerns by a lot of our members because this is really stretching how this is going to work. For me, it's the Department of Public Safety bringing in this thing is the hardest one to sort of get my mind wrapped around that part of it. With the juvenile justice programs, not to say that they don't belong there. Have you considered, whether this is a question for the commissioner or the author, have you considered taking that maybe a step later, one of those to come in at a later point? And my second question would be, what about an off-ramp? What about you're getting down the road and this is going and whoops, we never thought about that. Is there language here that gives a pause or a pivot? Because sometimes legislators, we forget to give those written permissions to change direction or say, stop, this is not going to work. Again, we don't know everything right now when we're writing bills. Is that language there for an off-ramp? And then just bring in that justice part of it for me. Thank you.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to have Assistant Commissioner Bailey respond to some of that, but I'll give an initial response. So first of all, regarding the off-ramp, I'm so glad you've raised this, Representative Baker. It's just a reminder to folks that under the bill, the commissioner would be named July 1 of 24. The agency starts on that date. We, of course, reconvene before that date, right? So we are in place at that point, and I certainly would expect, and I'm looking at, we obviously would need, I'll just say for my committee, I would think for other chairs as well, we'll want to hear in the spring, what is the plan, where are things at? There's no agency at that point in spring of 24. So we sort of have an automatic off-ramp in that sense, and maybe even off-ramp is maybe not the right term, because it might be we say at that point, things are good, but we need to push things off a bit, or we're feeling really good about where things stand. So just a reminder, there sort of is built into this, because it is actually a fairly lengthy amount of time, in fact, as Commissioner Harpstead alluded to, we really are in position that we will get back together again before anything final happens, if you could even say the name of a commissioner at that point, because no programs will move on July 1, 24 either. So even there, it's not even like that's final. And then regarding the piece of and reminder in Department of Public Safety, it's a pretty small piece there regarding juvenile justice, right? I just know, having heard from many members, many community groups and others about wanting to think differently about young people who are on a wrong track, which when you think about younger kids, that includes our child protection, child welfare system, et cetera. And I will say that I've been hearing from many groups who are saying, we think this idea is wonderful. We want in as well. Our program is not listed in the bill. We want in. So it's maybe a little bit arbitrary what's in or what's out, but a decision was made, and I'll turn to the person who was helping to make that happen, Assistant Commissioner Bailey, about the justification for that.
Assistant Commissioner Bailey.
Yeah, Chair Fisher, Representative Baker. Appreciate the question. I would say there has been a lot of thought into what's in at this point enlisted at a core service, and really discussions with senior leaders about what is ready, and frankly, what is the feedback that we've heard from young people, from families directly about what's needed in terms of our structure. That particular office is, I think it's about 4 or 5 FTEs. It's a specific office that works on JJAC. And then the youth justice piece, and they do incredible youth engagement work. And I think part of what we've heard in our in conversation with young people and with the staff and in community is that these programs shouldn't belong. When we're doing that youth engagement work, we're thinking about prevention services. That type of engagement doesn't belong at public safety. It belongs in an agency focused upstream. So that's the reason. But it is not the larger sort of youth or the larger Office of Justice programs or kind of larger functions that you might be thinking of.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey.
Representative Baker.
Just a follow-up, Mr. Chair. How about our county partners? And maybe it was put in here. I just really want to know how our county partners are supporting this. Are they on a? Are they nervous about something? How engaged have they been in our listening sessions here?
Assistant Commissioner Bailey. Chair Pinto.
And again, I think I'll start and then hand things over to Assistant Commissioner Bailey. So we did hear from the Association of Minnesota Counties in our committee yesterday with both some aspects they're very excited about and feeling really good about and some notes of caution as well. And if there's not a letter in the packet from them in this committee, I'm sure that there will end up being one and something that can be provided as well. But your Assistant Commissioner Bailey can provide some thoughts as well.
Assistant Commissioner Bailey.
Yeah, Chair Fisher, Representative Baker. I would love to turn it over to my colleague Angie, who's here. I'll just say we have a lot of work to do for that continued engagement. As you can imagine, as large organizations, part of it is kind of like putting this out there, having the dialogue, and moving the process. I think I believe that we are in regular conversation with AMC and MACSA. On this particular details of the proposal, we have one of our key asks in the bill is really funding the process in order to do that. So, but that said, I don't want to speak for Angie.
Okay. With that. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your information for the question.
Chair Fisher and Representative Pinto, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Angie Teese, Child Wellbeing Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thank you, Representative Baker, for the question. I think yesterday's tone was cautiously optimistic. We are very hopeful and recognize the need to begin thinking this way and thinking about how better to serve Minnesota children and families and specifically address inequities in the system and center equity and lived expertise in the design and implementation. I think our questions are largely around how are we being really intentional around engagement and collaboration and looking at other models like the SHAC model that exists within public health to make sure that we've got county, tribes, and the state and our intergovernmental partners really thinking about this together and making decisions together. We also have a lot of questions around the impact to workforce. And so at the same time when we're thinking about impact to children, Minnesota children and families, how are we thinking about the workforce and ensuring that one worker doesn't have to go to five different doors in order to serve that child and family? IT systems are a big portion of this. Data sharing is a big portion of this. And the other piece is really our county systems play a large role in financing, specifically child protection and child welfare. And so how are we thinking about the current financing streams that underpin this work and leveraging and doing so in a better way to leverage federal dollars that are available to us? So those are largely what keeps me up at night and what keeps me in conversation with Assistant Commissioner Bailey and Assistant Commissioner Brown. I'm very thankful for the conversations to date and the dialogue that we've started, and look forward to being a very active partner from a county perspective as we continue this process.
Representative Baker.
Just a final note. I think, again, as part-time legislators, we can't begin to understand the complexity of this. Again, I want to applaud folks for thinking outside the box. We need to do more of this. But I will not move forward unless my county folks are going to tell me they love what they see. That, to me, is going to be a real telling tale because they see this every day. And it's different in every kind of area of the state of Minnesota. So, again, I always get nervous when the state thinks we know everything and we want to have a – I don't want to call it a one-size-fits-all again, but I've used that a lot. I need to make sure our county partners are right in it and right alongside of it to be part of the licensing changes and the workforce challenges that they mentioned. So, I just – again, I think this is – it's certainly worth moving forward, Representative Pinto, and thank you for doing this. I just want to make sure that all of us as members – get to understand this with our local county folks. They will be able to talk to us on levels I think that we can really relate to at home. So thank you again for bringing it forward and looking forward to more conversations about this. Thank you.
Thanks. Good. And then Representative Hicks, and then I've got Representative Hanson.
Thank you so much, Chair. And I will be brief. Ms. Bailey, you triggered a thought for me, and I haven't asked this question yet, so please forgive me. You said Help Me Connect isn't coming over from health, which triggered for me, what about WIC? What about public health visiting after birth? Like all of those children's services over there. I hadn't actually thought about it until you mentioned it, so I'm just wondering if you can help me understand how how those decisions were made.
Assistant Commissioner Bailey.
Yeah, Chair Fisher, Representative Hicks, thank you for the question. I mean, this is where I would say I think there has been a lot of thought and planning into kind of what we've listed. There are a number of services that serve children, youth, and families across our systems. And coordination will continue to be essential, and there will continue to be a children's cabinet. In working with our agency partners, we essentially did not recommend that for this first step. We really focused on what I think, to be transparent, we've heard in some engagement conversations, additional programs, family home visiting, additional kind of things to be thinking about. And so we're very much tracking, aware of those, and I think why the thoughtful process is necessary to continue dialogue and being open for, you know, years to come about the right structure. And those questions that you raise are questions other states have raised across the country too, and some have and some don't. I guess I'll say one more piece before I stop. There is a strong desire, I think, on behalf of some of our local public health partners, too, to have these some of the services that you mentioned really tied to that local, that public health agency infrastructure. And so there's a lot of work and dialogue to be done there.
Chair Pinto.
Thanks. And just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair and Representative Hicks. The commissioner talked about this there being a clear trend in this direction around the country. And I think the experience in other states is that, and this makes sense, is that it does become a moving thing, right? So I know in Washington State, they established a new agency that then over time, some other programs said, boy, you know, we want in. There's a certain arbitrariness, except that it's not that arbitrary because all these folks have been working for months to think this through. And, you know, presumably over time, there will be some shifting in some programs. So we're sort of choosing the programs that we think, hey, this will work at this point, and then we kind of have to see over time how things work. Just a perspective, but
thank you. Representative Hicks, any other?
No, thank you. I was just curious because I hadn't thought about it until you said that. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Fisher, and thank you, Chair Pinto. I'm really excited about this initiative. I think if you've had any conversations with me over the last couple of weeks, I'm a big supporter and proponent of this. I think as much as this is important to help be sure that children and families get the best services, this also makes sure that the rest of DHS can do a lot more of their work too. So I'm really excited about that part. And in terms of child protection and child welfare, you know, I've continued to talk about this work my entire time here in the legislature. I've done a ton of work around child protection and welfare. And, you know, I talk about a lot that we have really unacceptable disparities happening in Minnesota, and those deserve our attention. And a department like this is exactly how we can do that, and we can do better. We know better. Let's do better. And I think this office is a step towards that. You know, last year when I passed the bipartisan bill to create the Office of the Youth Foster Ombudsperson, it was a great move on the House floor. We all really shared in the vision of what it looked like to be there for kids. This, I think, is a very similar vision. And so I'm really excited to support this and to be a cheerleader for this, if you will. And like Rep. Baker said, you know, this is innovative, and I think this is exactly what we need in this work. So this is going to help us do better to make sure that every kid of every race, religion, and ability can have a great start in Minnesota, and that's something we shall be really excited about. So thank you again for this.
Thank you, Representative Hicks.
Hansen.
I'm sorry, Representative Hansen. No. Apologize there. Seeing no further comments, Chair Pinto, would you like to offer any closing comments?
I actually would, Mr. Chair, and I'll just note gratitude to Assistant Commissioner Bailey and her team, and then especially being here in your committee, to Commissioner Harbstead and her team for their incredible work and her incredible leadership. I just want to note, like, if you think about it, this is maybe the public policy making that we all want to be doing, that we have to be thinking both in the granular details, like how do things actually work. I've really appreciated the discussion, but also to not lose sight of the big picture, right, which is to have our organizations work in ways and our agencies work in ways that are centering kids and families and achieving the goals we want to achieve. And to my mind, this is a move that absolutely moves us in that direction. So I hope that you can support it both today and beyond. And thank you so much to Mr. Chair and to all for your work. Thank you.
With that, I renew my motion to refer House File 2321 as amended to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed saying nay. The motion prevails. House File 2321 as amended is referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. Seeing no further business before the committee, our next hearing will be Wednesday, March 15th, where we'll hear a number of bills that have made first deadline in the Senate. Thank you all for a good discussion today. With that, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Chairman.